I'd like to open this meeting with a moment of silence. Silence followed by the serenity prayer for those who know it and will care to join.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
NA has no must, but the hotel has some rules. We request the guests under the age of 18 are accompanied by a parent at all times. Please ensure they are not left unattended at any time. Areas that we particularly want guests to pay attention to are the swimming pool, fitness center, and the entrances of the hotel. Our hotel is 100% non-smoking. Therefore, please ensure that no one is smoking within the facility. There will be designated smoking spots outside the hotel where smoking is allowed. If a guest smokes in any of our rooms, a fine of $300 per day will be applied to the credit card in the reservation. Pets 25 pounds or less are allowed. Pet fee of $50 will apply. Pets have to be kept on a leash at all times. So, I've asked a friend to read who is an addict.
Hi, family. My name is Rose, recovering addict. Hey, Rose. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. Getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jail, institution, and death.
Thank you. I've asked a friend to read what is the Narcotics Anonymous program.
Hi, I'm Stacey, and I'm definitely an addict.
Hi, Stacey.
NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women from whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete access for all of us. There is only one requirement for membership of desire without injury. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organization. We have no initiation fees, dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement group, and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections are, what you have done in the past, or how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problems and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting, because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experiences that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you. I've asked a friend to read, why are we here?
Good afternoon, family. My name is Chauncey. I am an addict.
Hey, Chauncey.
Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot live and enjoy life as other people do. We have to have something different, and we felt we had found it in drugs. We placed it ahead of the welfare of our family, our wives, our husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were actually creating our own problems. We seem to be incapable of making life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we have lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sorted up through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods were sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in our Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point and recovery is then possible.
Thank you. We've asked somebody to read the press and identity statement.
Hi, family. I'm Roxy. I'm an addict.
Hi, Roxy.
The press statement. As our 11th condition says, our public relations policy is based on fashion, and promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity
Press Radio and Film. The primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of the Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still suffering addicts. Members of the press are often attracted to our conventions and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last name in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If members of the press approach you, please direct them to the convention information booth located in the lobby of the convention center.
Oh, I'm sorry. I am so sorry. All right. I'd like to thank all the readers. At this time I have to introduce our speaker. I'm an addict. My name is Patrice. I'm sorry I wasn't paying attention. Okay, thank you. It's at this time is I'd like to introduce someone that I've grown to know very, very well, who's like a Timex watch, who takes a licking but keeps on ticking, and it's just a power of example for me. And with that, I'd like to introduce Barbara. Hi everyone, I'm Barbara and I'm an addict.
Hi Barbara.
I want to thank God. I want to thank God because it didn't have to be this way. I want to thank the committee for trusting and believing enough of me to ask me to do this workshop. I want to congratulate the Westchester area on their first convention. I am nervous, and one thing that I know, no matter how many times you stand up here and do this, and I do it quite often, it don't get no easier. And the reason that it don't get no easier, because one thing that I know about me, that I'm going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You know, and there was a point that I couldn't tell the truth. You know, wow, the woman's rap. I said, they know. But anyway, I don't even know where to start except just to tell you that I came into this process December 4th, 1988. And I need to tell you, before I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I had no self-worth, no self-esteem. My self-worth and my self-esteem was lower than a pregnant aunt, and that's low to the floor. You know, I was a broken woman, a hopeless woman, who just had no aspiration for life. I just felt that the way that I grew up, which was in a very religious family, and this God that they were preaching about was not the God that loved me. I grew up with a punishing God. And I couldn't live up to, never ever, as a little girl, I could never live up to the expectations that I thought God wanted me to be. Early on, before addiction even took place, now I won't even say addiction took place, before the drug took place, I was a thief. I was a liar. I was a manipulator, you know. Very early on, I learned to adapt many roles, because I never had my own identity. I come from a broken home where my family, my parents abandoned me. So I went through life thinking that nobody loved me and I wasn't good enough. Because when your own parents leave, how can somebody else love you? Now, I'm gonna need to tell you, I'm a product of molestation. I'm a little girl who peed in the bed every day until she was 10 and a half years old. I need to tell you, I got beaten every day for peeing in the bed. I got humiliated. I got embarrassed. You're looking at a woman who's dyslexic. And that I'm 63 years old, and I need to tell you, back then, that was not a diagnosis. I heard things like I was stupid.
what's wrong with you. You're lazy. And I need to tell you, it was painful. And somewhere along the line at age 10, no, let me back up. Down south, they give you these homemade remedies for colds. And it was called a toddy. And that consists of brandy, tea, with some lemon. And I got a cold one day, and my grandmother gave me this tea. And I need to tell you, back then, I don't remember how old I was, but I got sick often so I could get this tea. And anybody that grew up in the South, they gave you Castrol, cod liver oil, Father John. I promised God and all 12 of his disciples when I got grown, I would never ever take that stuff again. But anyway, today I can laugh at that. And I need to tell you, I was always a kept child on the outside. I'm talking about that I look like a porcelain doll. But on the inside I was broken. And I need to tell you, at age 10 or 11, I came to New York from South Carolina, which was Mount Vernon. And my mother was remarried. She was in New York doing domestic work. She did what they call sleep-in work. And I asked her, could I live with her? And she told me she had to ask her husband. So once again, I felt unwanted. And I need to tell you, from age 10 and a half, when I came to New York, I raised myself. I learned everything that I learned from the streets. I was always tall for my age. People didn't ask many questions, and I gravitated towards older people. And I loved the attention that they gave me. And that lifestyle took me on, and it took me on, and I went to school, and like I told you, it was very hard, but I was determined because my mother was an illiterate woman. I didn't even know about sitting up front and asking questions. I just know that I had a couple of teachers who saw something in me and took time and patience with me. And I stayed after school, and I was afraid to let people know that I didn't know that I know. So I managed to graduate high school, and when I graduated high school, I became a fashion model. And in the 60s, it was very hard for a black woman to climb the top. At that time, I was not willing to pay the price that it required for me to climb the top. Little did I know it was going to happen anyway. And I need to tell you, I got a normal job. After my modeling career lasted for about 2 years, I got introduced to a whole nother world. When you're in the modeling and you're an actress and all that other stuff, there's a whole other lifestyle that go with that that I didn't even know about. And I hung out in this club in the Village. It was called the Ones to Salvation. And a lot of quote-unquote known people today used to hang out in there. And I got introduced to cocaine, tie stick. And back then, I need to tell you, my first opiate high was Robitussin AC. And back then, you could go in the drugstore, all you had to do was sign the book. Somebody in here about as old as I am, because they know I'm talking about. But anyway, I got accustomed to this lifestyle, and I started hanging out in after-hours spots and all this stuff, and the lifestyle was so glamorous. But I watched these people. I'm really getting ready to tell it. The men wore diamond stick pins. They drove El Capoleros with Rolls Royce tires. They had on these pretty loud suits. Their hair was processed. And cocaine was plentiful. It wasn't like Some people know what I'm talking about. You went to somebody's house, they put out a bowl of Coke, it wasn't nothing. I'm talking about the shoebox album cover, and we were sniffing out of $50 bills. All this was glamorous back then. Cleaning the weed off the album cover and the shoebox top. And I was always gravitated towards men who had this look. And they used to have that thick roll of money in their pocket. Wasn't interested in how it got in their pocket. All I know was they had it. So when my modeling career ended, I had got addicted to a certain lifestyle. And that certain lifestyle, in this club that I hung in, I had a couple of the pimps that I know now what they were. They took me as their little sister. So one day I said to Tony, I said, I lost my job, because I had gotten a regular job when my modeling career ended, but that money was a little too slow. Mm-hmm. I had lost my apartment because I wasn't paying the rent. I wasn't going to work. I started hanging out. Cocaine became more attractive than work. It came more attractive than paying the rent. It came more attractive than a lot of stuff. So the lady said to me that I could not get my things out of this apartment unless I paid her the rent. Now I need to tell you, remember I said as a child I was a very kept little girl. My outsides always, but always dictated who I was and how I felt. So when she said that I couldn't get these clothes, I was devastated. I didn't care about the furniture, but see, the clothes was my world. So I went back to this club where the hustlers hung out, and I said to Tony, your women wearing mink coats and they got on diamond rings and all this stuff, I want to do what they do. He said, no problem. Now mind you, I'm dumb. How they say back then, dumb and full of cum. I mean, I was dumb. And he introduced me to a couple of his stable. And when he introduced me to the stable, he told me, they'll teach you the ropes. I'm down. We talking about money, and I remember, mind you, I like diamond rings and fur coats and all this stuff, but this particular night, they took me to 54th Street and something. And I'm standing up there waiting on a trick. Now I need to tell you, I could not bring myself to do that. The trick would walk up and I said, get the fuck away from me. And this went on for about a week. And every night I came in, I had no money. But after anybody that's in here ever lived that lifestyle, after you done worked all night, it's party, it's cocaine and all that other stuff. So they let me party with them with my broke ass. And something happened to Tony on that seventh day, I ain't had no money. Baby, that man beat me. I had never, ever been beat by a man in my entire life. I'm talking about till my eyes was like this. So it didn't occur to me that I didn't need that lifestyle. What occurred to me with my smart thinking self was that if I wanted this lifestyle, I was gonna pick the man that I want. And I can tell you right now, baby, he had on a jumpsuit. Well, I can tell you to this day what color it was. One side was red, one side was white. Wait a minute. I ain't finished. He had on a pair of red gaiters and an all burn process. I eased up to him and I said, "What's your name?" He said, "Baby, they call me Hut." Baby, I chose this lifestyle, but one good thing about Hut was I didn't stay in the street. He taught me how to do this thing, and I took lessons. There was a lot of things, y'all, that being a prostitute, you don't have to do. Everybody think that there is all required. I'm learning to talk like a lady today, so I'm not gonna be graphic. But there are guys that pay you for some weird stuff, and I became an actress because it wasn't about laying on my back and doing this. I'm talking about some weird stuff, and I became good at it. The better I became at it, the more they paid me. Dominate you? What? Step on your what with my heels? What? You want a golden shower? Here it is. I could win an Oscar. I became good at it. So anyway, let me leave that part alone. And somewhere along the line, he said to me, he had a cold. Mind you, I'm still dumb and full of cum. And he told me cocaine was plentiful, and back then Alka-Seltzer used to come in a little bottle like this. And that always had cocaine in it for me. And he told me, I saw him with this little glassine bag, and he told me, "Barbara, see that woman standing over there like that? Ain't nothing worse than a dope fiend woman." And he was older than me. So, he went to jail, and I need to tell you, I had a 3-family house in Philadelphia because I retired from the lifestyle. And let me just back up. I didn't stand on the street corner. I became a madam in a whorehouse. And when I retired from this lifestyle, before I retired, I had any and everything a black woman would want. The maids, the chauffeur, the diamonds, the furs. In my house, in the middle of the floor, the trap door was the vault. My linen closet was not your average linen closet. On the top shelf, I later found out, was pure dope. The second shelf had the quinine bonita. The next shelf had the cocaine and the tie stick and all this other stuff. But anyway, to speed this up, my man was expediting drugs from Philadelphia back to New York, and he got arrested. But before he got arrested, they used to always see him sniff out of this glassine bag with the little straw. And he used to tell me it was for his allergies. Didn't bother me. So he went to jail, and I got a cold. And I went up on that top shelf that I see him go to, and I took a little bit, and baby, I got so sick. I thought I was gonna die. And I need to tell you, when the throwing off wore off, I didn't care if he ever got out of jail. As long as I had a pack of cool cigarettes. Back then it was those Jive magazine, the True Romance. What do you call them? True. Well, you all know what I'm talking about. All I wanted to do was nod, watch TV, and the world could have fell down around me. When his lieutenants came to the house to come talk business, they gave me the money, whatever, and I just let them do what they do. Speed it up, he got out of jail. I don't know at this time that I'm sniffing pure dope. I am strung out to the third degree. And he looked at me and he said to me, You've been on that top shelf. Now, Tony, the pimp, beat me that one time, right? And I swore that no other man was gonna beat me. So he found out that I was strung out on this dope, and he beat me, and that nigga went to sleep. He shouldn't have done that. Back then, Pepsi Cola used to come in a long, tall bottle. Baby, I broke that Pepsi Cola bottle off on that nightstand. The rest is in my fourth step. But anyway, the progression of this disease. And although I had everything that money would buy, I still felt like a shell on the inside. I always thought that money would make me happy. Now I got a Jones and I come back to, no. After I cut him, I left Philadelphia. I called my mother and she came and got my two children. And she got my two children and she came back to Mount Vernon and I told her I would be okay. And I got some money and I got some things together and I left before he came back to the house. And to this day, I've never looked back. But I need to tell you, just to speed this up, as a result of the lifestyle that I led, one of my sons is a trick baby. And until I came into this fellowship, I could never tell nobody that. But every time I looked at my child, I knew the truth. No one ever questioned who he was and what he was. But every time I held him, I knew the truth. So anyway, I don't believe I stood up here and told that. But,
love you, Barbara.
What happened was, I came back to Mount Vernon, and anybody that I knew back then, the men had gone to Vietnam, people that I had gone to high school with. I didn't really know any people who were positive. Everybody was smoking this stuff called freebase. The people that I was attracted to anyway. And it's always a man, y'all. I met this man and he said we could change our lives. And I said, well, baby, how are we gonna do that? He said, we'll get on the methadone program. Well, baby, I got on the methadone program on Arthur and Tremont in the Bronx. I saw these women over in the park, and they were drinking out of wine bottles and pushing a baby in a stroller. I said to myself, that's disgusting. And I need to tell you, I gravitated towards people who look less than me to make me feel good about who I was. The greasier you were, you could hang. Because I didn't have to look at me. So anyway, to speed this up, about 6 months after being on this program, me and my dressed up ass gravitated towards this park. And that's where I met some doctors who wrote prescriptions. Now, I need to tell you, but I'm a woman who started out with Pipers with a cherry on the top, or Moet, and it became Thunderbird, what's the word? And these same women that I looked at in this park that I turned my nose up at, who was so disgusting, I started off with, I'm not drinking behind them, give me a cup. Better than, baby about 6-7 months later. No, but I had to drink first in the beginning. In the beginning, as long as I got the first drink, then it became, I don't care, just give me the damn bottle. Okay. But to speed this up a little bit, I started selling this free base that everybody was so strung out on. And one day I took lessons from a girl who was selling drugs for me. I sat across her kitchen table and I took lessons how to smoke. Y'all know the first couple of times I didn't get it right. And I sat there and I watched her. And one day I got it right. And I need to tell you, the day that I got it right, washing my body was no longer an option. Going in and out of jail, going in and out of jail. I need to tell you that the Westchester County Jail became my home group. I'm serious. The COs became my sponsor. Because though some of them believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. And everybody that work on law enforcement is not bad. I had a lot of them. A lot of them that prayed over me and said, "You're such a nice, pretty girl. Give yourself a break." And something miraculous happened. My last arrest was my greatest asset. And what happened was I fell on my knees in that jail cell. And I always, no matter how long I'm here, I get emotional. I fell on my knees in that jail cell and I said, "God, if you're there, please help me. I'm too afraid to live and too afraid to die." God heard my cry and they called the Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Thank God for H&I. And that's where the seed was planted. I went in that meeting and a guy was sharing his experience, strength, and hope like I am now. And the most profound thing that I ever heard in my entire life at that time was, "You never ever have to use drugs." And he was still sharing his story like I'm doing now, and I started saying it out loud. "I don't have to use drugs. I don't have to use drugs." That's all I heard. But anyway, that's where the hope was planted for me. And I need to tell you, the first day I got out, I didn't know I had a disease. I went out for about maybe 8 hours after I got out of jail. And this woman asked me, did I need help? And I gave her the stem, the crack. And that was December 4th, 1988. And I've been here ever since. And just to bring you up to speed where I'm at right now is that I've been married twice in this process. My first husband died in 1997. Currently, I'm married to a man who has difficulty in staying clean. And I need to tell you, along with that came a lot of shame for me. Because the reality of it is, I didn't want you judging me. And if anybody that's in this room that's married, you're married on a covenant. And my vows are for better or for worse. In sickness and in health, to death do us part. And I'm talking about when is worse enough? When is the expiration date on for better or for worse? And I love my husband. And I was sharing with my sponsor the other day, I have not dealt with, in my 63 years of being on this earth, I have not tolerated and endured the things that I've endured in this marriage. But I need to stand here and tell you, guess what? I'm not going nowhere. I love him. I'm going to stand beside him. And let me just show you this quick, and I know I only got a couple of more minutes. In my darkest hour, in my darkest hour, my most hopeless hour. God, my God, my God, sent two women. One of the women didn't know me from a can of paint, and she called me. She said, I want you to do a fifth step with me. And I tried to get out of it. She kept saying, I'm being obedient to the Spirit, and I chose you. And she's a woman whose husband couldn't stay clean either. And I'm her, the other lady, I'm her grand sponsor. She just recently asked me to sponsor. Her husband couldn't stay clean either. And I'm telling you, you never know when God gonna send his angel. And this weekend, my husband's at this convention. And you wanna know something? I fell in love with him all over again. See, I know what his potentials are. I know that he's a good man. I see good in him when nobody else don't, and that's all right, you know? And why God chose me to endure what I've done. And I know that he knew that I could handle it. I shake and I roll and I come in here and I tell the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. And in the beginning, I said to myself, how do I stand up here in a woman's wrap and just get naked like this? I almost took the damn wig off. You know? Because the reality of it is, I don't know how to do this no other way than to tell the truth. So if anybody's in here that's struggling, just keep coming. And I want to read you something right quick out of the High and Wire, page 148. And it says, addiction is a deadly disease. We know that the addict who don't find recovery can expect nothing better than jails, institution, and death. Refusing admission to any addict, even one who comes merely out of curiosity, may be a death sentence for that addict. We learn to practice tolerance of addicts who don't look like us, think like us, or share like us. We teach by example. Pressuring new members to talk and act the way we do, we send them back to the streets. It certainly denies them from the right to recover and learn in their own way. Compassion lends kindness to all our efforts in service to others. With compassion and foundation of our actions, we learn to support members through any difficulties that they may experience. I'm an addict. Thanks for having me.
Okay, moving right along. I'm an addict and my name is Patrice. And we have a second speaker. Yeah, we have a second speaker and her name is Michelle and she's from Philadelphia. Hi everybody, I'm Michelle and I'm recovering from the disease of addiction. I want to just thank God.
I want to thank him for his traveling mercies to come from Philadelphia up to here. You know, our literature says that addicts travel long distances to carry the message.
Yes.
You know, I want to thank my best girlfriend, Shonda, my sponsee sister, Cinquetta, for riding out with me. God do put angels in your life. I want to thank you, Barbara. I love you so much. You know, I want to thank my newfound family and friends up here. Shout you out, Nadine and Gloria. You know what I'm saying? Denise, you know. I want to thank one of my predecessors that in the Philadelphia area, Glendora. She's here somewhere. I love you, Glenn. My heart is like boom, boom. I want to thank the Westchester area for inviting me to come out and to carry the message of Narcotics Anonymous through my experience, strength, and hope. And congratulations on your first year. It says a new vision. A new vision. Let me see. A new vision of hope. You know, I can remember being hopeless. You know, not hoping for nothing. Had no hopes for anything. You know, except for those things like Barbara was talking about. You know, I hope, you know, it won't be long for a trick come by. And I hope this dope is good. And, you know, and I hope I don't skitch too hard and they take advantage of me. Those types of hopes. We talking about having a new vision of hopes. You know, hope for living. You know what I'm saying? Hope for change. You know, because if you could do it, I can do it too. You know what I'm saying? I want to welcome the newcomer. You know, welcome to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You never have to use again. Just give yourself a break. Even if you don't understand what's going on right now, just give yourself a break. Continue to bring the body and the mind to follow. You know, stick with the winners. And the winner is anybody that got another day clean. You know what I'm saying? And if you want to change, stick with those that's practicing change. You know, I'm grateful. I too am nervous. I'm up here. I feel like I'm about to just ramble on. But it's something about telling the truth, because when we tell the truth about ourselves, you know, the disease, it dies at the light of exposure. You know, it's something about being honest about who you are. You know what I'm saying? Well, for me, I'm just finding out who I am. You know, I was listening to Barbara share her story at 19 years younger and 19 years younger in recovery. I stand here today with 4 years. I celebrated yesterday. About coming around here since May 28, 1990. So to them that have relapsed, don't count yourself out.
That's right.
You know, relapse is a reality, but it's not a requirement.
Right.
You know, but I continue to relapse because I didn't want to change. You know, I continue to relapse because I wanted to do things my way, like Frank Sinatra sing, I did it my way. You know what I'm saying? I continue to relapse because I thought I had all the answers. I continue to live on the non-existent virtues. I continue to live on the things that have no room in this new way of life. You know what I'm talking about? I continue to live by the women that put in my mind, you know, you should never be broke. You know what I'm saying? As I hear Barbara share her story, she was like the women that I clave to in Philly. You know what I'm saying? You know, I too, and I believe probably 90% of us in here have experienced molestation. You know, I've experienced molestation and from the age of like 5 to 11, and then at 15 I was raped. And it's like I put myself in those places and in the positions of being I'm going to say rape, because the molestation piece, I had no knowledge of what was going on. I was young. My voice was taken. My innocence was interrupted because of someone else's perversion. You know, I didn't know no different, but the feeling felt good. You know, and I continued to get down with the person, a family member, you know what I'm saying? And it's like the literature in Who's an Addict talks about how this disease is present long before we pick up a drug. It talks about any mind and mood altering substance that takes us outside of ourselves, you know, and I began to chase a feeling at a young age for a long time. Then as I got older and I found out you could get paid for that same feeling, you know, that became my way of life, you know what I'm saying? So like, I wanted to be down, I wanted to be accepted, I wanted to be a part of, you know, that totally hip Fally cool clan, you know what I'm saying? And then I found myself, can you give me some water? I found myself, you know, on a route with the hustlers and the three-car Molly people and, you know, running scam and game and all of that kind of stuff. And I went over Jersey with these people and the brother took advantage of me. You know, I was afraid. I could never speak up for myself. You know, I found myself in the same position of in the inside screaming, saying no and stop. You know what I'm saying? But I just couldn't speak it. I just couldn't stand up for me. And I found out that was one of my character defects as I began to do step work, that I could never stand up for Michelle. I could never say no. I always said yes and wanted to say no. But as we do the work around here, I have a voice today and I know how to say no. Even though I might go right back to it, but goddamn, I said no. It's my choice and my decision to do whatever it is that I said no to, where at first I had no choice. I found out once I came into the program, you know, it gives us a voice. It allows us to say, yes, I want to do that, and no, I don't want to do that. And, you know, I'm learning how to pause and think before I react, because we impulsive people. Yeah. We just do. We just go. And not thinking about the circumstances and the consequences that's going to come behind our decisions and actions until it comes. You know, so like, you know, I like I said, I've been through the molestation and I've been raped and like, I had to have something to escape my reality. I had to have something to deal with the ugliness that I was feeling on the inside. I had to have something, you know, to put a cut on life. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, trying to be hip and down and cool and rolling with the old-timers and, you know, they talking about getting money. And then when I began to get money, like they were saying they were getting money, and then they began to dislike me. You know, oh, that bitch, she thinks she this, she thinks she that. No, I was all that. And then some. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I began to use drugs, man. I guess we probably all, well, I ain't gonna say all, because the literature say some and most, you know what I'm saying? But for me, I began to use drugs around 12, 13. You know what I'm saying? Around that age, because I needed to escape my reality, and I wanted to be down and hip and cool and accepted, and all of that kind of stuff came with the territory. You know what I mean? And so, like, as years went on, you know what I mean? I remember graduating, and while I had a job, my first job, senior year, I was working at this place, and I came to work, and I was high as a kite. I mean, like, I should have put Visine in my eyes, but I didn't put the Visine in my eyes. You know, when we use, we just is dumb. So anyway, you know, I should have put the Visine in my eyes, but I didn't. And the boss seen that I was high, and I was giving away money, and I was forgetting to put this in there, and, you know, forgetting, you know, all of that kind of stuff, and he gave me this book. I was like, well, what kind of book is that? I don't like reading any goddamn way well. But you know, I'm going to take the book, because I don't know how to say, no, I don't want the book. So I took the book. So I scan through the book. I really don't even know what the book is. All I know is a lot of numbers 1 through 12 in the book. That's what I can remember about the book. You know, and when I read the first step, because it was the basic text. I'm talking about at the age of 18. God trying to work.
Wow.
God trying to do. You know, when I experienced what I experienced, the molestation and the rape and everything, and me crying out like, God, well, where were you since I've been doing the step work, and how he allowed me to see he was right there all the time. I just wasn't listening. He was right there when the person at the desk says, no, she too young to come up in here in the hotel. He was right there trying to intervene right then and that I wouldn't get raped, but no, I want to sneak by. You know, I'm trying to be all cool, you know, and down and everything. And when I get upstairs, things happen. But anyway, so the man gave me the book. I might jump around, but I know y'all can follow me. And he gave me the book, and I ain't pay attention to it. You know, but it's something about when God got your number. It's something about when God is calling your name. You can't keep ignoring him. You know what I'm saying? Because he's going to make it to where as though there's no way out but through him. You know what I'm saying? It's you got to listen. So anyway, I act like I read the book. You know what I mean? So I gave the book back to the man. He asked me some questions. I don't know. I wasn't trying to hear that. So I quit. You know, I quit the job. I'm here to work. I ain't in school. You know what I'm saying? So I quit the job and everything. And I'm talking about how that was the beginning of my end. You know what I'm saying? I was quote-unquote drug dealer. You know, we the best customers. When you claim you selling drugs, you your best customer. You know, and I dealt with them kind of men too, the hustlers. Totally hip, fairly cool, hat to the back, gel material. You know, that's what I always said. I need a nigga who jeans is sagging and boots is dragging. You know what I'm saying? Come on, you know what I mean? That's the kind of dudes that I like. Them no good ass mother. You know, there's something about them. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, you know, I was dealing with the peoples, and like he was selling drugs and everything, and I was selling drugs for him, you know, and I'm snorting and everything, and I'm you know, selling the coke, the crack and everything, and I too felt like I ain't never gonna be like them. My mother said to me, Michelle, and you better be careful because you gonna wind up like your brother. I said, I ain't never gonna be like him. My brother was smoking like a broke stove, you know what I'm saying? I'm looking at him saying, I ain't never gonna be. I know y'all might not have ever said that about nobody, but I said, I ain't never gonna be like that. Only to be like that, only to be at the table with him, only to be striking matches with him, only to be pushing screens, you know what I'm saying? All of that stuff, only to be right there. Cause this disease is insidious, it's cunning, it's baffling, and it don't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? And excuse my language, you know, but anyway, it just don't. You know, so as time progressing, as the disease progressed in my life, I remember being that derelict, and I remember living a degraded life, and I remember like just my spirit is dead, and the literature talks about how our conscience is seared. You know what I'm saying? Burnt, marred, smeared. You know what I'm saying? I remember being in that lifestyle, hitting, tricking, and spitting. You know, standing at the bus stop. You know, waiting for the bus, they ain't got a token of first. You know, standing rocking at the payphone, because you know I want somebody to blow. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about those was my types of hope. I hope a nigga hurry up and blow his horn. You know what I'm saying? But we talking about a new vision of hope. You know what I'm saying? So like I continue doing in this lifestyle for 5 years, from 85 to 90, I was a bum. I was a bum. I'm talking about Miss Prissy. I was a bum. I'm talking about a girl who was kept, who looked good, pretty, well-known, popular since elementary school. I was a bum. That's where the disease take you. That's where active addiction take you. It rob you of everything. your spirits, your joy, your material things. You know, I had the jewelry, the gators, I had it all. But in the end, I ain't have nothing. I ain't even have me. You know what I'm saying? So life goes on and it goes on. And then I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous through H&I. You know, they come up to the place where I was. You know, I got kicked out of that rehab. You know, I got kicked out because I wanted to do things my way. You know, I was always in something, some little he say, she say, you say, I say. You know, I got tired of hearing the girls talk, well, I'ma do this. Yeah, because I said, listen, where I come from, if you're tough, you ain't gonna talk about what you gonna do. You just gonna do what you gonna do. You know what I'm saying? So if you feel like you wanna fight her, and I'm tired of hearing her say she wanna fight you, think this, she wanna fight you and you, and what y'all gonna do? They kicked my ass out. The lady was like, she says, she was asking me, you know, the therapist, they asked me all these questions, and I'm like, you know, pressure, I can't deal with the pressure, you know, and I'm like, I don't know the answer to these questions because everything I tell you, you tell me I'm wrong. So the next question she asked me, I said, well, you tell me the answer because I seem to be wrong, you know. And she like, oh, Michelle, you so smart. That's why we kicking you out of here today. I said, oh, okay. You know, let me call my dad, my great enabler. And I said, I'm going to get, because at this particular place, they collected money. Y'all remember the welfare cards, the medical cards, the blue, well, it was paper back then in Philly, you know what I'm saying? And I said, well, let me, you know, call my dad, you know, interrupt his day. And he came on up in the Nabisco truck to pick his baby girl up once again. You know what I'm saying? And I said, I'm going get high. Because nothing had changed while I was in the program. Nothing changed. I was just there. I was just taking a break. And when I came out, I wound up using again. And some guy asked me, he says, well, Shelly, what you going to do? You going to walk away on life again? I'm talking about how God uses people to say things, to get you back on course. And it hit me like, only for a second, a minute or something, like, damn. But that shit said, get mine. I was like, I guess I am going to walk away on life again. How many, I'm saying, you got that shit, they wouldn't sell me nothing. Because there's something about when people love you and want to see you do better. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I'm just going to speed it all up. I live to use and use to live. Very simply, I'm an addict whose life was controlled by drugs. You know what I'm saying? I'm defining ways and means to get more by any means necessary. So I come into the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I came in here with a better than attitude because I came out of rehab with jewelry, with a car, with a dope dealer on my side. You know, I'm on his arm. I had it all. You know, driving a Lex. I had a pet monkey. You know what I'm saying? I really did. His name is Chim Chim. He's a white face capuchin. So, you know, I'm living a ghetto fab life. You know what I'm saying? I had a monkey on my shoulder and I had these two Neapolitan mastiff dogs. I'm talking about living a ghetto fab life. You know what I mean? And like, I was in fantasy, which was really my first choice of drug. And dig this. I was living a life that I always wanted to live. I always wanted to live totally hip, fairly cool. I always wanted to be on the arm of a drug dealer. I always wanted to have the glitter and the glamour, the bells and the whistles. So I was living a fabulous life. You know what I'm saying? But none of that mattered. None of that matters when the disease go knocking at your door. You know what I'm saying? So once again, I listened to the disease, and I felt like as long as I can get high for about 6 months, but don't pass a year, I'm gonna be okay. Now, I'm talking about trying to get high successfully. It's not possible. It's just not possible. And even though I did these things, I still was living in bondage to the disease. I thought because I had things, I thought because I had a Lex and a monkey and these dogs and money and jewelry, I thought because I had things, I could still get high just a little bit. You know, but that little bit getting high went on, and eventually it was full blown again. You know what I'm saying? And I'm speeding up because from May the 28th, 1990, I did a 3-year dance. I would get 3 years clean and I would use. And I would get 3 years clean and I would use. So I thought I had it. You know what I'm saying? I thought I got high successfully. So anyway, this last time, November the 4th, 2007, was it for me. I had things, but I ain't had no spirit. You know what I'm saying? And it's something when you peekaboo at the steps and you begin to do stuff and people begin to blow life into you. They begin to fan your flame of desire. They begin to, you know what I'm saying, get you where you need to be. And so, like, I'm coming to life a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I'm connecting with God more than ever because I thought I was God. If I couldn't make it happen, it wasn't happening. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, my last run was a wicked run. It was so wicked. It was just so wicked. You know, and every time I think about my last run, I get emotional. You know what I'm saying? Because they say you remember your last run. Because it's your last run that's going to keep you here. You know, in all the years that I've been here, I ain't feel like none of my runs was that bad. You know what I'm saying? I didn't feel like, you know, I still had things, Nadine. I didn't feel like nothing was wrong with me. You know what I mean? I was so fucked up. I didn't think I had no defects either, but that's another thing. You know, so anyway, my last one, when I think about it, right? And me and my girlfriends and nothing, we was laughing today because I was talking about how crazy I was. I stand here today with the ability to put words together. I stand here today with the ability to walk and talk. I'm telling you, my last run was so, so wicked. I was around some people, man. I was around some people that I didn't know. We didn't jump rope and blow bubbles together, and we didn't play boy catch a girl, get a girl. You know, we didn't do none of these things. So, you know, I'm a new jack on the block, and I'm getting a attention of the men that they used to tricking with. You know how that thing go. New one on the block, you know it. My game is off the chain like that. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, these people, they did some things. They did some things. They was into voodoo. Oh God. They was into voodoo. They did some things, man.
Come on, baby, share.
And when I just think about it, right? And I think about where I come from, man. And I'm saying, God, how did I get here? How did I get right here? I remember God asking me one simple question.
Come on.
He said, do you want to die? He said, do you want to die? And I'm smoking a joint, and I'm just going through the motions, but I couldn't hear nobody else. I seen everybody, lips moving, this dude, lips moving, but I couldn't hear nothing else. You know, and when I come out of it, I'm like, God, this ain't nothing but weed. You know what I'm saying? Justification. You know what I mean? And it seemed like that weekend was a lifetime. I'm talking about, I'm getting high on stuff that I knew not what I was smoking. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about how I would hit something and pass out. You know what I mean? How I would smoke and come to, and the person said, damn, that was only 2 hours. I'm talking about smoking something and passing out for 2 hours, not knowing what's going on, not knowing what they doing to me. You know what I'm saying? And so when I come to, I know something going on though. So I'm trying to catch them, do what they doing to me. And yet I'm still trying to get high and watch my dope at the same time. It's just not possible. So here it is, I might get a good hit, little good crack hit, mouth get all watery, you know, lips get moving like a washing machine, back and forth, you know. And then the next thing that I smoke, I pass out. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm driving in a car, man. I was feeling fingers all touching all over me. They touching me and they grabbing me and they just touching me. But guess what, y'all? I was caught up in such the grip. Like I put paper, newspaper down on the seats like that was going to block the people from touching me. I'm talking about how I just couldn't stop, though. I just couldn't stop getting high, being caught up in the grip. I mean, like the vice of the disease. That this damn disease, this enemy, devil, whatever you want to call him, he wanted my life. He wanted my soul. And that's what this disease do. It want to take you out. It want to take you out. It don't want you to experience no joy, no freedom, no peace, none of that. It want to just take you out. So I'm riding, I'm trying to get high, and I'm being touched all on, man. I'm looking in the bumpers of the cars, and I see the faces of the people in the car. I'm talking about how, yo, I'm grateful to stand here today and to be able to tell y'all about how good God is. I'm talking about how good God is when you really, really, really look at your life, man, and you look at where he brought you from and what he brought you through. All you can say is thank you, God. Thank you, God. That's all you can say. When you really, really look at your life, man, I'm supposed to be dead. I'm supposed to be dead, Glenn. He asked me, do you want to die? I said, no, God. No, I don't. No, I don't. And he spared my life. So that's what? He delivered me. He delivered me. And I can say that because deliverance is in our literature. It's in the traditions. So anyway, he delivered me from the disease of addiction. We in a spiritual program which deals with spiritual matters. We in a program of recovery. So I'm talking about recovering. I ain't going to dwell on active addiction because I ain't getting high no more. I'm the problem. Drugs ain't the problem no more. I'm learning how to live life on its own terms, man. I'm learning how to survive my emotions today. You know, I'm going to read this from the seventh step because I was going through some stuff and I was asking a couple of people in my life. I said, listen, why is it that it feel like everybody that I used to rock with, we ain't rocking no more? God, what is it? What do you want from me? Why am I by myself? Why am I by myself? I'm used to hanging out. I'm used to doing what I want. I'm used to going where I want to go, but it ain't like that no more. Look, and in the seventh step, it says that every time we come up, it says that every time we come up short, that's the wrong one. It says we are being changed. We've not only heard about the miracle of recovery, we are becoming living, breathing examples of what the power of the NA group can do. The spiritual life has ceased to be a theory we hear about in meetings. It is now becoming a tangible reality. We can see a miracle simply by looking in the mirror. The God of our understanding has taken us from spiritually unconsciousness, hopeless addicts, to spiritual awareness, recovering addicts, eager to live. Eager to live. And that's where I stand at the day. I'm eager to live. Whatever it takes, come hell or high water, snotting, crying, whatever I got to do, I won't get high. I won't pick up a drug. I won't pick up that nigga because that nigga always led me back to the drug. You know what I'm saying? I won't pick up the lifestyle and the behaviors because that's what led me back to the drug. After I did a fourth step and I sort through the confusion and contradiction of my life, believing I was that girl and all of that other kind of stuff, all of that led me to getting high. I was totally Shorty, hit Phelan Cool, Shelly Shorty, Mickey Star. You choose which one. You know, it depended on the atmosphere and the environment, which one showed they had. Look, we chameleons. Today I choose to be who I am, Michelle Allen. And I'm learning who I am. I'm being introduced to me for the first time through this program called Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm allowing my sponsor to sponsor me. I'm using my home group and phone numbers, and God is building a new, broadening my base with my friends here in New York. You know what I'm saying? The broader the base, the higher point of freedom. Come on. If your friends don't hurt your feelings to save your life, they ain't your friends. Get a new set of friends. I'm recovering today, and my name is Michelle. Thanks for listening.